Next case is 97-137 Buckeye Community Hope Foundation versus City of Cuyahoga Falls. Mr. Lips. Watch your time on the clock.
This case arose as a result of the pre-existing zoning ordinance which existed in Cuyahoga Falls. The site issue was zoned R-17. Buckeye Hope, the appellant in this case, selected the site because the project was contemplated by it would fit within an R-17 zoning without any zoning ordinance amendment or variance. And in fact, the site plan was submitted in early 1996. On February 21st, 1996, the Planning Commission unanimously approved the site plan. We went to City Council subsequently. The City Council approved the administrative grant for the site plan by a 6-3 vote on April 1, 1996. Various citizens within Cuyahoga Falls, therefore, thereafter began circulating a petition for a referendum. It was at that point in time that the appellants here filed a complaint in the Common Pleas Court and sought a temporary restraining order, which was denied by a preliminary injunction hearing. And at that time, following a presentation of evidence, the court denied the preliminary injunction. We believe, Your Honor, that this was a erroneous decision. The court, if you look at the trial court's decision, he said that Cuyahoga Falls, regardless of whether this is a legislative act or an administrative act, the latter point is the most important to this appeal. It's an administrative act. That under the charter of Cuyahoga Falls that the matter could be subject to a referendum. And the court went on to cite the East Lake decision, which as I proceeded through my argument, I'll tell you, was a completely erroneous application and understanding of the East Lake decision as it applies in this case. The appellants took an appeal to the Court of Appeals in the 9th District following argument. Unfortunately, the decision was affirmed, and once again, we believe it was an erroneous decision under prevailing social law in cases that this court over the years has handed down. The decision of the 9th District said that Article 2, Section 1F of the Constitution does not apply to charter municipalities. I went on to say that under the Home Rule Amendment, the charter municipalities have the ability, notwithstanding what the Constitution says, to go ahead and subject to referendum administrative acts.
The ruling for you, would it not require us to restrict in some way the sacred right of referendum?
I don't believe it would, Your Honor. I believe that this court has already established the boundaries of this sacred right of referendum. And those boundaries were established back in 1912 at the time of the Constitutional Convention, when the people reserved to themselves, as a populace within the state, a right of referendum on legislative acts. It was at that point in time, Your Honors, that the populace, as it is, reserved that singular right, and then went on into the Home Rule Amendment to give charter municipalities some additional rights to govern themselves. But I believe what you just suggested has already been decided, and in fact, in various decisions that have been handed down by this court over the years, this distinction that we are presenting to the court has already been determined. In fact, the U.S. Supreme Court determined it, I believe, in footnote 9 of the East Lake decision. It went on to cite the very same section of the McQuillan Treatise that Appellees cited, saying that municipalities and communities do have the right to determine whether they want to subject to referendum to administrative or legislative. But the U.S. Supreme Court then went on in the next sentence in footnote 9 to say, however, that's been determined in the state of Ohio to be confined exclusively to legislative acts and not include administrative acts.
Would you concede that sometimes, oftentimes, the line between administrative act and legislative act is one that is not crystal clear?
I would suggest, Your Honor, I would agree with Your Honor, that in certain instances, there could be a line that is not crystal clear. I would submit in this case, it is very crystal clear. And I base it on the simple record before us, as well as the decisions of this court on numerous occasions where they've allowed variances to, in fact, be construed to be administrative acts.
The entire history of this project and all the things that went on with regard to it, did the legislative authority ever have to take one vote on any action that clearly was in the area of the legislative purview?
I believe not, Your Honor, with respect to this project. I believe that the decision in the legislative act occurred at the time when Cuyahoga Falls had its zoning ordinance entered into in the very first instance, because it was zoned R-17 in this case, and at that point in time, it was merely an administrative action from that moment forward when the site plan was submitted. It didn't ask for a variance, it didn't ask for an amendment, asked for no legislative changes whatsoever, simply tried to put that R-17 designation did so.
Because when I was in council, we always used to run into that kind of a problem, that you would have a vote to rezone the property, and then it sat there for a little while, then somebody came in for a special use on it, or a variance. And then that becomes an administrative matter, but you have legislatively done something that clearly is in the ordinance making capacity, and is clearly legislative. So in this case, you're saying none of that ever occurred.
I'm saying it's not correct. I think if you look at the after brief, they would see that this was zoned R-17 project that was submitted well within that particular zone.
Yeah, I read all that. I just couldn't believe that at some point there wasn't some legislative act involved with this. But that wouldn't be what you'd be referendum-ing anyway.
That's correct, Your Honor. They're referendum-ing the administrative act.
What test would we write? How would we write a test to give guidance to others who would wish to challenge what purportedly is a legislative act, an ordinance of a charter of a city, where we look at the substance? That's your argument, is that this is really all it's called, or it's denoted an ordinance. It's really an administrative act. How do we write a test for others to apply?
I think, Your Honor, that actual test was actually written back in 1968 by this court in the Donnelly versus City of Fairfield Park, a case in which it set forth the exact description of whether or not an act is administrative or legislative.
That needs no modification in your view.
It needs no modification in my view. I think, Your Honor, that if you look at this case is boiled down to one very simple issue, as the appellees argued. They say charter municipalities are not bound by Article 2, Section 1 of the Ohio Constitution. They want to create a two-track constitutional system. And I would submit that if you start down that path, what other constitutional limits may be affected if, in fact, that is what is bound to be acceptable by this court. I think in the Donnelly case, the test on legislation versus administrative was established. That was, I believe, followed up by the Forest City Enterprises versus City of Eastlake decision that syllabus one and in the opinion, the court went on to make it very clear that referendum are limited in the state of Ohio in a charter community. Eastlake was a charter community to legislative acts. And it said that's irrespective of whatever label was given to that act by the city council or the charter or whatever. The court has repeatedly and admittedly non-charter situations in both the Myers case and the Clinton case gone on to make it very clear that it is confined exclusively to legislative acts. And I cannot stress the importance of Eastlake and what the U.S. Supreme Court has done. If you go back and look at that, syllabus one was accepted by the United States Supreme Court as, in fact, binding law. I think those are the words that were used by the U.S. Supreme Court. That syllabus is the syllabus in the charter context that made the distinction between legislative and administrative acts, with the latter not being subject to referendum.
What is the only, is there only one way for citizens to react to administrative acts of a legislative body they don't like, and that's the ballot box?
No, Your Honor. I believe that the citizens of Cuyahoga Falls had a remedy available to them, which would not be available to the appellants here if you accept appellees are. That remedy, quite simply, is an administrative appeal under Chapter 2506 of the Ohio Revised Code.
Would they have had standing?
I believe they would have had standing, Your Honor.
How? Unless they can show that they're materially affected, have some financial detriment. I think that's what that statute calls for. But anyway, you think they could have administratively appealed?
Well, they have a remedy available to them, whether they fit within that statute based on their own individual circumstances. I can't attest to that, Your Honor, but I am familiar with a number of appeals that have been brought by various citizens protesting some administrative action that was taken.
But from the legislative authority's administrative action or from a board or commission?
This court has made it very clear, and I believe once again it's in the Donnelly case, that a city council can act in an administrative capacity. That's why I'm resisting your attempt, Your Honor, to put on the hat that because it's city council, therefore it must be sort of this legislative feature.
No, I'm not attempting to do that. I'm just inquiring.
Okay, well, I believe it's been very clear that a city council can act, and in fact, construed by this court, and I think it's syllabus off, not certainly in the opinion itself, that they can act in an administrative capacity. And that's what appears to be the label when you make determinations whether it's administrative enough or not. In light of that, I believe there would be a Chapter 25 or 6 of the DO office.
From an administrative action of a legislative body.
I believe so, Your Honor. In this case, as I said, there was no new zoning law act enacted. There was not any amendment to an existing zoning law. It didn't enact a zoning variance of any kind. That's clear on the record. This court in the Myers case and the Lent case, as I've said, has permitted or refused to allow referenda off of acts such as a permit, issuance of a permit for an operational landfill, as well as a zoning use exception to building heights regulations. In the Forest City Enterprises versus City of Eastlake, there was some relief that was given from unnecessary hardship. Nothing like that has happened in this case. There was, in the Donnelly case, a failure to reapprove subdivision of the land. And the Cuyahoga Court of Appeals for the Solon Sanitary Landfill case clearly understands what Myers and Linton stand for. That's another charter community. And that involved a resolution authorizing a contract for private management of landfill, and under those circumstances, there was no referendum right. The athletes, I must say.
Let me stop you there. What do we do with the argument that 1171.03c of the ordinance, which provides that ordinances that are made pursuant to Chapter 1114 are ordinances. I mean, they're not administrative actions. How do we get around that?
I think once again you go back to what this court did in the Forest City Enterprises versus City of Eastlake, where it said you apply the test to determine whether something is legislative or administrative, irrespective of the label it's given. If in fact you could label, you could get around whether something is administrative or legislative, then there would be no administrative acts. All charter communities would declare everything legislative. What you have to do is look at the determination as to whether the act is legislative and a law is created, or whether the body or the action of that body consists of executing an existing law. And in this case, the facts are very clear. There was a zoning law on the board. There was no variance, no amendment, no change whatsoever fell within it. It was a complying use. It was administrative at that point, and it continued to be administrative even at the point the city council acted on it.
Council, is there a mechanism by which the citizens, if they felt a particular area, undeveloped area of the community, ought not be developed in a way that the present zoning calls for, to go about exercising some change?
I don't purport to be a zoning expert in terms of how the citizens go about making changes to existing. Simple matter is they could have gone through a process
of initiative petition.
Again, to change the zoning, either by ordinance or by application, point where they lose that right, in those cases are quite clear, is when somebody purchases the property and puts a site plan on the table. At that point, they can't come in and change the application for that particular piece of property. And of course, been confronted many times with those kinds of situations. But that land was zoned R-17 and continued as an R-17 zoned land up until the moment in time that my clients went ahead and put a site plan on the table. I submit that the citizens were concerned about that and wanted to keep something preserved a certain way, that at that point in time they could have, up to that point in time, they could have taken such action, and they did not do that. Let me briefly address the question as to whether the Home Rule Amendment basically trumps Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. As I said, the Forest City Enterprises versus the City of Eastlake makes it very clear that you can only mandate a referendum as to administrative, as to legislative determinations. This court, in the Avery versus Sherrell case, said, this is a very important quote that I think the court must be mindful of. It says, a city or village which adopts a charter for its government pursuant to the Constitution does not thereby become an independent sovereignty, and such municipality has no greater power to exercise local self-government than a non-charter municipality. That was followed up in the Perrysburg case. And I do see that my time is out, but only as I sit down, Your Honor, indicate that the RISPO really case and the Kent case make it clear that municipalities that choose to adopt a charter cannot enact local laws that will conflict with the Constitution. I believe we're at a constitutional crossroads. This has already been determined by this court, and to rule in the way that the appellees have successfully prevailed to this point is unconstitutional. I'd ask that the court reverse this.
Thank you, Mr. Lips. Mr. Arrington.
Mr. Justice Douglas asked Mr. Lips if a reversal in this case would restrict the sacred right to referendum. I submit to this court that a reversal in this case would restrict even more sacred political maxim, that is, that all political power is inherent in the people. That is the foundation of a democratic republic.
And the people, when they give authority to the government, they can restrict that authority or give them authority to themselves. They can restrict that authority, can they not, in their constitution?
Absolutely.
And is that not what they've done here?
That's exactly what they've done here. What has happened here, Your Honor, is that referendum powers, unlike Mr. Lips' arguments, are not held by the people because the Constitution grants them those powers. They are held by the people because the people are, in fact, people. And people have...
That's good argument. Well, maybe to read the council makes the point that in Eastlake, I mean, what do you make of two things? Eastlake is a charter city, and footnote 9 here in that opinion discerns what our court has said. Why don't you address both of those in the concept that home rule does trump other articles of constitution?
In the Eastlake case, the decision by this court, the court basically said two things. First, that the Eastlake charter required a referendum on any zoning change was contrary to the Constitution because it did not make the distinction between legislative and administrative acts. The second thing it said was that the Eastlake Charter also constituted an unlawful delegation of legislative power. On appeal to the United States Supreme Court, it only dealt with the second issue because that issue was the only one that dealt with the United States Constitution. And they said, no, that doesn't constitute an unlawful delegation of power. Of power. The United States Supreme Court in footnote 9 did not overrule or overturn or otherwise deal with the first decision of Eastlake concerning the Ohio Constitution because that is uniquely the province of this court to consider the Ohio Constitution. The United States Supreme Court said this court can consider the Ohio Constitution the way they have. We're not going to touch that. as I think in my brief, I believe that this court's decision on that first issue as to the East Lakes Charter as it relates to this, to the Ohio Constitution, was based upon the same fundamental flaw. And that was that this court saw referendum powers as being delegated to the people by the Constitution rather than being reserved by the people. I believe that the language...
But that reservation was limited. Was limited to legislative powers. Legislative act.
In the Constitution, right. It was limited.
Yes.
The same Constitution, at the same time that that provision was made, also granted to cities all powers of local self-government. I believe that Article 2, Section 1F of the Constitution grants limited referendum or recognizes limited referendum powers apply to those cities that either have not adopted the charter or whose charter does not provide for referendum.
Yeah, right. That's the only explanation you can give. I mean, that's why you gave me the brief.
Right.
It's non-chartered cities, but, you know, if you follow that reasoning, that indeed it was an original reservation of powers to the people, and it was limited to referendum legislative act. Can the home rule amendment then recapture those rights that weren't reserved, and now we reserve them in charter cities, but we didn't for the municipalities of the states and the Constitution?
Yes.
Why do you say that that can happen?
Because the Constitution doesn't grant rights to people. It delegates powers to the government.
We delegated that power, didn't we, by the Constitution? We delegated the power and have no right to have a referendum on administrative acts. We delegated.
We delegated to the government
right.
The right to handle administrative actions, but we reserved the limited right to all cities in the state to referend legislative acts.
And we delegated from all cities in the state. Doesn't it go one way?
I don't think so. No, that's the whole point. I don't think that people in the city of Cincinnati have the right to delegate away the political powers for the people who have called. Those political powers are inherent in the people who have called. The home rule provisions of the Constitution recognize and, in essence, reaffirm fact that in the city of Cuyahoga Falls, or the city of Columbus, or the city of Toledo, all powers of local self-government are inherent in the people. So what you have is a situation where we in the city of Cuyahoga Falls, we could choose to have every site plan reviewed by the people in a town meeting. Local self-government means nothing less. We have chosen to delegate that authority to Planning Commission and the City Council. Having delegated that authority to those bodies, we can reserve the right to review those decisions by way of referendum. Local self-government means something less. A reversal of this decision will in effect say that home rule doesn't mean home rule. And it will say that all political power is not inherent in the people. It's inherent in government.
The argument, of course, is that home rule doesn't mean home rule anymore. It means home rule is whatever rule a municipality is permitted to do within the confines of the Constitution, within the powers that were delegated and reserved. Is that not effective?
To the extent that, I think the whole problem with the Constitution is that Article 2, Section 1F was written backwards. Usually what happens in a constitution is it delegates political power to the government. And then there may be a Bill of Rights, as our constitution has. When you get into a situation where you're enumerating rights, you get into the problem that the enumeration itself ends up limiting other rights that are enumerated. Article 2, Section 1F is essentially in that nature of an enumeration of rights. Rather than a delegation of power. Article 2, Section 1 does not delegate any power to any government. It simply says, for all cities, if you don't have a charter having a referendum provision in it, we have one for you. Article 2, Section 1. But if you do have a charter referendum provision, because you have the powers of local self-government and because all power is inherent in people, you may reserve the right to referendum in any manner. Once again, the people of City Cycle Falls still require a town meeting for every governmental decision to recite plans. If this court holds that they don't have the right to referendum the local site plan, what is going to be happening throughout the state, the city attorneys start, people are going to start amending their charters and taking away powers from the government, they've already delegated to the government.
How do we get this to be an administrative action solely? When, as I recall it, City Council's approval was labeled ordinance.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
And you don't pass ordinances on administrative matters.
See,
now, this looks like it's an administrative matter, because it's really approving what the Plan Commission did. But it still is labeled an ordinance, isn't it?
It is labeled an ordinance, and in fact, it is an ordinance. And Donovan said that the enactment of an ordinance is a legislative act. That's a very real problem here, but I believe that the appellants failed to prove their case in trial. This case was tried. It wasn't just a motion on preliminary hearing. This was a complete and ultimate trial on the merits. And there was no evidence presented as to the nature of this ordinance other than the ordinance itself. This court, City Council, enacted Ordinance 48-1996, which has the same force and effect of law in the City of Cuyahoga Falls as every other ordinance passed in that city since 1812. Moreover, Section 2 of the ordinance repealed any other instances of legislation.
If you accept that, accept that it was an ordinance, why do you have to make the argument with regard to Section 1F so strongly that administrative acts are also subject to referendum?
When I argued the case in the Court of Appeals, I stressed the fact that the ordinance was administrative. The Court of Appeals didn't want to hear it. They wanted to hear the argument on the constitutional.
Wait a minute, that the ordinance was administrative.
They didn't want to hear legislative.
Okay. I thought I understood the case.
The frustration I've had in writing briefs on this case is looking at the record doesn't support half the facts that are alleged. I mean, I couldn't even cite to a place in the record where there was sworn evidence that a referendum petition had ever been filed. That's the state of this record. And as a threat, and
well, now whose fault is that?
It's the fault of the party that the burden of proof to trial. They presented three witnesses who testified that if they didn't get to build their project, they would be irreparably harmed. That was the extent of the evidence.
But again, why do you rely so strongly that administrative acts, because it really would be a change in the law to pretty clearly say administrative acts are subject to referendum, would it not?
I don't think so. The cases that this court has, except for the Eastlake case,
yeah,
all the other cases that were decided by this court dealt with referenda that were filed under the Constitution. The Eastlake case is the only one that had a problem. I believe that language is different than the Eastlake case. I don't even think that needs to be reversed.
And do you think that the language in 1F where it says legislative action means, could it just as easily mean any action taken by the legislative body?
I didn't say that too. The reason I'm stressing this...
You didn't argue that. I just thought it might be a good argument.
The reason why I'm stressing the constitutional argument is because the last time when I tried not to stress it, the court wanted to hear it.
You're arguing the alternative. I mean, that's what you're doing, aren't you? You're arguing in the alternative. You're hoping one of your arguments catches fire up here. Why isn't zoning a police power?
Zoning, I thought,
okay, yeah. Well, why is it subject then to 2F?
Because
well, you've argued home rule, but that's a broader, obviously that's a broader term than the police power. The police powers are very specific, and if it's a police power, you're more confined, aren't you, in your argument?
No, the power of referendum is not a police power. The restriction in the home rule powers with respect to police powers doesn't apply to restricting the right of local self-government. So the people have the right of local self-government. The issue here isn't the zoning. There was no zoning decision made here. Okay? The issue here is whether or not the people have the right to tell their government how to make decisions. And if this court reverses what they'll be saying, people don't have that right. The people do not have the right to tell their government how to make decisions.
Do we have to change Forest City Enterprises or overrule it, Eastlake?
No, I don't believe so. I believe that that case, the language in that case was dictum. Actually, the syllabus, the first syllabus, if you just read the words of that first syllabus, I have a problem with those, because they are again talking about section, Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. There's nothing in that syllabus that says that that's applicable to charter cities. So I don't believe the Forest City has to be overruled.
Could the city council in this case have voted no on this ordinance and the project not go forward on the basis of not approving what the Planning Commission did? If that's the case, then you could read it on all questions which such municipalities may now or hereafter be authorized by law to control by legislative action. So if they take a vote not to do something, that would have been legislative action.
That's why, the argument I made in my brief concerning whether this is legislative or administrative, the point is it was incumbent upon the plaintiff to prove that it was
administrative. Don't the Donley, Linton, and Myers case all help define this question we're talking about, what is legislative and administrative? Well, we had this court already said that it's already enacted, it's defined as
finder, but if you look at those cases, they say that each case has to be looked at on its own facts, and an analysis needs to be made. In this case, the only evidence of what the city council did in this record is the ordinance itself. Nobody testified as to what the city council considered. Nobody testified as to the procedure the city council used. None of that's in this record.
Council, let me take your approach one step further. Let's assume that you have a scheme or approval that doesn't require council to do anything. In other words, you've got the zoning, you file a plan, the administrative body checks off on it, they go ahead and build. But council fortuitously passes an ordinance confirming it as well. And now, can the voters knock out that project, even though council's approval wasn't necessary?
And if that approval is effective, going to what Justice Douglas has been asking, the people in City Title Falls have reserved themselves the right to review by referendum any ordinance or resolution.
But even if council's approval is not required for the project to go forward.
Even if it's not required, any ordinance or resolution.
So effectively, they could backdoor. You could pass a resolution because you've got some unhappy residents who want to start a referendum. You could go in and gratuitously pass an ordinance to kick in referendum when your legislative scheme didn't even call for council involvement in the approval.
I see what you're saying, Judge, but I guess, Your Honor, the point that I would make, and obviously my time is up, but the point that I would make is that people in the city of Tiger Falls could, by their charter, require that every site plan be approved by a majority vote of all the residents in town meeting. If they can do that, then clearly they can hold a referendum to renew the act, the power that they delegate to the government.
Thank you, Mr. Arrington. Mr. Lipps, you've used your time, which may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just very quickly, I want to say that I do not believe that any recapture of the rights that were defined to Section 1 occur. It's very clear in the case law that charter municipalities are subject to the general laws and the Constitution of the state. We cited this authority in the brief. One of the justices asked the question of a referendum of zoning. As police power, I think it was maybe the Chief Justice, the Risco case does say that a referendum on a zoning issue is in fact an exercise of police power. The effect of this is going to have, if it is affirmed, a chilling effect on property rights owners for the very reason that they have a compliant use of
may be an unpopular project that would deny them the right to use the property, but the council sits in no other capacity other than merely an administrative capacity. This court, in repeated decisions, has made it very clear that labeling something as an ordinance or a resolution or a legislative act, they say everything's a legislative act, and it's purely administrative in nature, that you have to pierce through that label and make a decision based on that true nature of it, whether or not it is in fact an administrative act or a legislative act with the latter or legislative act.
Thank you, Mr. Lips. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.